From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jimmy Gaudet. It's Idaho Matters. Idaho is about to become the only state in the nation that puts patients who are dangerously mentally ill, but who have not committed any crime, in prison. This is nothing new for Idaho, which has been putting people suffering from mental illness behind bars since at least 1954. So why does this happen? How does it affect people? And is it constitutional? These are all questions that the nonprofit newsroom ProPublica set out to answer. And reporter Audrey Dutton joins us now to tell us what she found. Hi, Audrey.
Hi, how are you doing?
So let's start out with, who are these folks? Have they committed any crimes when they go to prison?
So the population that we looked at is severely mentally ill folks who have been deemed dangerously mentally ill, and they have not been charged or convicted of any crimes.
Wow. So they haven't done anything wrong. They're just sick.
That's correct. And they've been committed to the state. So they're under an involuntary civil commitment.
All right. And that's civil, right? We should point that out.
Right. It's for mental illness.
Got it. Okay. So where do these folks end up? These people are folks who are going to jail just down the hall from death row inmates. Is that right?
Yeah. And actually, it's in this case, it's a little bit different from jail. It's prison and it's maximum security. So when you think of, you know, in movies, what a solitary confinement cell might look like, it's a little bit like that. These are a set of 9 cells that are set aside for civilly committed patients within the maximum security prison south of town.
So, and these are, you have some pictures. They're tiny cells. They're, well, frankly, they're kind of ugly and squalid looking. And they're tiny. They're prison cells.
Right. Yeah, we were given 2 tours. Idaho Department of Correction brought us in, and we were able to get photos. I don't know if that's ever happened before, honestly. But we really wanted to be able to see what the conditions were like. And the cells are about the size of a parking space. Mm-hmm. They have 1 small window that looks out onto the prison yard, floodlights, razor wire fences, rocks on the ground, and then desert in the distance. And they are basically, you know, brick and metal. So there's a small sink, a small toilet, a small bed frame, or in at least one case, it was kind of a concrete slab on the floor over which a mattress would go. And just not a whole lot of stimulation. It's not a therapeutic environment. One thing that I noticed in talking with the staff there and watching them interacting with patients and things like that, the staff are really, they take a lot of pride in what they do, and they believe in helping people with mental illness. A lot of them have family members with mental illness, or have worked in this field for a long time. And they feel a passion for it, but even they recognize this is not the appropriate setting for people who are suffering from, in a lot of cases, schizophrenia. So they may not really be aware of what's going on around them. The setting is just not ideal. And also, it's prison employees who are providing care, including the Idaho Department of Correction, you know, psychiatrists, psychologists, all of the mental health staff are provided by the Department of Correction or through the contractor, through their medical contractor. So it's not a psychiatric hospital by any means.
And is there anything separating these folks from convicted inmates?
There is what I would refer to as an imaginary barrier, because it's it's essentially set up so that it can house the civil patients as well as people who have been charged and have to be restored to competency before they can stand trial, because Idaho doesn't have an insanity defense. And the occasional person who is an inmate already is serving a sentence, is there for punishment, but also has severe mental health issues that make them a danger to have out in the, general population. But the staff tries to keep them separated as much as they can, tries to, get the people who are on civil commitments out of their cells as much as they can. But it is largely an imaginary difference.
We're speaking with ProPublica reporter Audrey Dutton about her investigation into why Idaho keeps some psychiatric patients in prison. Now we should point out that, these folks are in most cases severely mentally handicapped. They can have violent episodes, but they're basically being kept in what it sounds like amounts to solitary confinement. You mentioned in the story that folks who are locked in these cells peel the paint from the walls.
That's right. And it happens so often that when we were on a tour, one of the corrections officers said, yeah, we've talked about whether to even keep painting the walls when between patients, because it's so commonplace. There's just not a whole lot of stimulation. There also are some cells where folks have left graffiti, drawings, words, kind of all over the cell. So it's these folks are having to be isolated for a very large part of the day. In some cases, as much as 23 hours a day. And that is partly because it's unsafe for them to be around others. So, and I want to stress, people with mental illness are not more likely to be violent than others. They're actually more likely to be victims of violence. In some cases, though, and in about a half dozen cases a year for this program, there are people who are suffering from psychosis or delusions, and they might believe, for example, that when someone approaches them at the hospital to take a blood sample to do some testing that's associated often with medication, that they're trying to implant a device in them, that delusion might tell them that, or that a nurse is trying to infect them with a disease or something like that, and they lash out. And it's the disease that causes them to behave that way. But if it's not controlled, they can be violent. They can react with violence. And so this is the solution that the state has relied on for since the 1970s, is putting them in a maximum security prison as though that is a treatment facility.
And is this legal? Is it constitutional? Institutional? Has Idaho tried to find a better solution in the past?
That is, those are some excellent questions. I'll try and tackle all of them. So is it constitutional? I talked with an ACLU attorney. I talked with the Bazelon Center. They specialize in mental health, civil rights law attorney. So I talked with two of the, foremost national attorneys when it comes to civil rights for people in prison and mental health civil rights. And they both said, this is unbelievable. Didn't even know about this. And also it raises some very, very serious questions about whether it complies with laws that are meant to protect people with disabilities from being separated or receiving different treatment from those who don't have disabilities, and as well as, potentially some other varieties of constitutional rights. And the state is very aware and has been for a long time that this is a potential civil rights issue. So in the 1970s, when the state was considering putting this program under the purview entirely of Department of Correction, advocates came out, including one man who had been working with these patients previously, and they came out to the legislature and they said, this was in 1976, they said, you cannot do this. This is inappropriate. It's not good mental health care to keep people in an incarceral environment. And so it was interesting because when I started working on this story, I thought, well, what's the origin of this law? You know, kind of a basic research question. And so I went back in the legislative law library out at the state house. I went back and tracked kind of the history of this law. And when I got to 1976 and saw those hearings, I gasped because I couldn't believe that at the inception of the program that we know now, that exists now, that people were saying that this isn't right. And they've repeated that throughout the decades ever since. We've had someone come out who is one of the leading advocates for mental health treatment. He came out, toured the facility, and said it was a dumping ground, essentially, for people with mental illness, and could not believe that it was down the hall from death row, and just how the conditions there. So yes, there have been many calls for reform over the years, attempts to get a facility built. And just this last session, legislative session, early 2023, the chiefs of the Department of Correction and Department of Health and Welfare wrote a joint letter to members of the budget committee for the legislature and said, this is a liability for us. This is a potential civil rights violation. And for various other reasons, can you please appropriate money so that we can build a facility, a proper facility for these folks?
Well, if I find it a little terrifying that folks can be locked up in a prison for no fault of their own, who are suffering, you know, who haven't committed any crimes. It's just, it's scary. Now, New Hampshire was the only other state doing this, but you wrote that a patient died there, so they're building a new mental health facility. And now, apparently, Governor Brad Little wants to build a facility. Is that going to happen?
Well, he brought forward the proposal in the last legislative session. So his the department directors wrote the letters to the members of JFAC, Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee. And Brad Little was asking for $24 million to build a 26-bed facility that would be have security from Idaho Department of Correction, which obviously the patients currently are, they have their security from that staff. And then it would be the clinical treatment would be provided by health and welfare. So despite receiving that, you know, written, I struggle to think of a time when a government entity of any kind or individual has said, hey, we are breaking the law here, you know, and putting it in writing. And I was just kind of floored by that. But the budget committee declined to take it up. And Governor Little has signaled that he plans to try again in this coming legislative session, perhaps putting it in his budget, because he put it forward for a permanent building fund advisory council to kind of sign off on, which is a required step before, you know, constructing something. But so it looks like he's going to try asking again, and we will see what happens.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
Did you know you are physically adapting to all your swiping, scrolling, and tapping?
We're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
NPR's Body Electric, a special interactive series investigating how to fix the relationship between our tech and our health. Listen in the TED Radio Hour feed wherever you get your podcasts.